Imagine waking up tomorrow to find out that the only way to keep the sun shining is to sacrifice 1,000 human beings today.
Right, and then having to do it all over again tomorrow.
Exactly. And the day after that, I mean, that is the foundational everyday reality of the universe we are diving into today. So welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is to map out one of the most, you know, intricately detailed and honestly terrifying fictional galaxies ever created.
It really is staggering when you look at the scale of it.
Yeah. And we are pulling all of this from an incredibly dense, just fascinating essay titled The Grim Dark Galaxy, An Introduction to Warhammer 40,000. So whether you're prepping for that upcoming Henry Cavill Amazon adaptation, or, you know, maybe you've just seen those massive space marines in pop culture and wondered what the hype is all about, we're going to break it down for you.
And it is a phenomenal text to use for this because it strips away all those usual sci-fi tropes like utopian progress and hope, and it forces you to confront a universe where survival itself is just an absolute atrocity.
Right. Which brings us to the mission statement of this entire universe. If you really want to understand 40K, you have to know this one line. It's defined the franchise for nearly 40 years. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war.
Yeah, it doesn't promise, like, a clever third option where the scrappy rebellion swoops in and wins. It literally just promises war forever in the dark.
Okay, let's unpack this, because that foundational quote isn't just clever marketing copy. It literally spawned an entire literary genre, the very term grim dark. You know, a genre where the world is broken, morality is muddy, and the best you can hope for is to just lose slowly. That takes its name directly from that sentence.
It's the defining trope.
But to truly understand this genre, we have to look at this universe's complete and utter lack of traditional heroes.
Yeah, and to understand why there are no good guys, you really have to look at the satirical roots that are outlined in the source text. It was created by Rick Priestley back in October 1987.
Under the name Warhammer 40,000, Rogue Trader, right?
Yeah. Exactly, Rogue Trader. And this setting was completely conceived in the really politically charged environment of 1980s Britain.
And the essay makes a really crucial point here that we need to highlight just to be totally impartial. The setting is a darkly comic, highly exaggerated satire of things like militarism, fascism, religious fanaticism, and empire. The text is very clear that the authors are critiquing these extremes by blowing them up to a galactic scale, not endorsing them.
Right, because a lot of modern sci-fi gives you a faction that is flawed, but, you know, ultimately they're striving for good.
Like the rebels in Star Wars or something.
Sure, exactly. But here, the faction that serves as the protagonist, the Imperium of Man, is a techno-feudal, violently xenophobic, totalitarian nightmare. It is a regime that quite literally feeds its own citizens into industrial meat grinders.
So it's like a space opera where the side you're supposed to root for is actually the villain, but they are fighting even worse villains.
Well, yeah. The villains they are fighting literally want to consume human souls or, like, wipe out all biological life entirely. So, yes, the Imperium is the best option available.
Which is saying something.
It really is. You aren't meant to cheer for them. Yeah. You are meant to be horrified by the fact that their brutal methods are actually necessary for survival.
Man, that reframes the Space Marines entirely for me. Because they are the poster boys of 40K.
Mm.
You know, towering, iconic super soldiers in massive armor. I always just assumed they were the noble knights of this setting.
Most people do when they first see them.
But reading how they are actually created, it's chilling. I mean, they aren't just guys putting on power armor.
No, they are child soldiers. The text goes into detail about how the Imperium takes preteen boys from these hyper-violent death worlds, and then they implant them with genetically engineered organs.
Like second hearts and acid-spitting glands.
Right? Yeah, third lungs, the works. And then they psycho-indoctrinate them until literally every shred of normal human emotion is erased.
So they are biologically incapable of understanding the humanity they are supposed to be protecting. The essay literally describes them as completely self-deceiving. They think they are noble paladins, but they are basically genetically engineered weapons of terror.
What's fascinating here is how the perception of the setting evolved as the audience grew. Because as 40K became this billion-dollar multimedia franchise, newer fans sometimes missed this satirical edge.
They took it at face value.
Exactly. They look at the Space Marines and the Imperium, and they read the heroic framing completely straight. But that darkly comic, satirical DNA is the absolute foundation of the world building. I mean, it explains the mechanics of daily life for the average imperial citizen.
Which is just absolute misery. Like working a 15-hour shift in a manufactorum, building artillery shells, eating rations made of, get this, recycled human corpses, and praying to a regime that will execute you if you miss a quota.
It's relentlessly bleak.
Which naturally leads to the big question. If the Imperium of Man is this vast, million-world, theocratic nightmare, who's actually running the show?
Yeah. Well, let's ground the timeline first before we get into that. The dating system in 40K is notoriously fiddly.
Oh, yeah. I had to read that section of the essay twice just to grasp it.
It takes a minute. So the present day of the setting is roughly 40,000 years from now. You'll see dates written out like 999.M41.
Meaning the year 999 of the 41st millennium, which basically translates to the year 40,999 AD.
Right. And in the closing centuries of the 41st millennium, the absolute ruler of this million-world empire is the God Emperor of mankind.
Okay, the God Emperor.
But here's the catch. 10,000 years ago, the Emperor was a living man. He was an immensely powerful psyker, meaning he could wield raw psychic force. He was this brilliant, towering figure who unified Earth, or Terra, as they call it, and launched a massive crusade to reconquer the galaxy.
But the essay points out his defining trait was that he was a militant secular rationalist.
Exactly. He explicitly forbade anyone to worship him, or anyone else for that matter, as a god.
So what does this all mean? Wait, if his entire crusade was based on secular science and banning religion, why does the essay describe the modern Imperium as the most fanatical, superstitious theocracy imaginable?
Because of how his grand crusade ended. He was mortally wounded in a catastrophic civil war. And to keep him from truly dying, his loyalists placed his broken body on a device called the Golden Throne.
Yeah, the name sounds regal, but the description in the text is pure body horror.
Oh, it really is. It's this ancient, half-understood, continent-sized machine, and it acts as a life support system and a massive psychic amplifier. For 10,000 years, the Emperor has basically sat there as a decaying, rotting husk.
Trapped in agonizing limbo.
Yeah, neither truly alive nor truly dead.
It's the ultimate tragic irony. The man who dedicated his entire life to wiping out religion is now worshipped as a literal god by trillions of people across a million worlds. Like the exact thing he hated became the foundation of his empire.
And he can't even govern. He hasn't spoken a single word in 10 millennia. The actual day-to-day rule falls to the High Lords of Terra, which is this suffocating Byzantine bureaucracy that essentially just manages the slow decay of the empire.
The text refers to the Emperorless as a king and more as a haunted lighthouse.
Haunted lighthouse, yeah, it's such a perfect image.
It's incredibly evocative. But it begs the question, why does a crumbling galactic empire need a psychic lighthouse in the first place? And the answer the essay gives is rooted in the brutal logistics of survival.
It all comes down to the physics of interstellar travel.
Right, and here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because in standard sci-fi, faster than light travel is usually a clean mechanical process. You push a button, jump to hyperspace, and grab a coffee, right?
Safe and boring.
Exactly. But in 40K, they travel through something called the warp, which is also known as the immaterium or the sea of souls. And based on the text, the best analogy I can think of is, imagine having to drive your morning commute through a literal, actual hell dimension where your own road rage manifests as physical demons trying to peel open your car.
That is painfully accurate. The mechanics of the warp are what make this whole universe tick, because the warp is not empty space. It is an ocean of raw psychic energy that parallels our physical reality.
And it's shaped entirely by emotion, right?
Entirely. Every feeling of rage, despair, or lust from every living thing in the galaxy ripples directly into the warp. So over millions of years, those emotions pool together, achieve sentience, and form the four malevolent gods of chaos.
So the demons aren't just generic monsters. They are the weaponized reflection of the galaxy's own misery.
Precisely. And traveling through the warp is the only way to cross the galaxy because it compresses centuries of travel into mere widths. But you are literally flying your ship through the realm of these chaos gods.
Just casually cruising through hell.
Right. So to survive, Imperial ships have to project a Geller field, which is this fragile bubble of normal reality that keeps the madness out. If that field flickers for even a second, the crew goes completely mad. Or the ship arrives at its destination with a cargo hold full of things that used to be people.
Absolute nightmare fuel. And even with a Geller field, you still have to actually navigate. You can't just use a standard compass when you are flying through an ocean of pure emotion.
No, you can't. So the Imperium relies on navigators, These are a highly sanctioned strain of mutant humans who are born with a psychic third eye.
A literal third eye.
Yeah, and that eye allows them to perceive the deadly currents of the warp without their brains immediately turning to fluid.
See, the hypocrisy here is staggering. The Imperium's state religion demands the violent extermination of all mutants, yet they tolerate and even elevate these navigator mutants solely because the Empire's supply chains would instantly collapse without them.
It's totally hypocritical, but they have no choice. And the navigators still need a fixed point to steer by because the warp is chaotic and constantly shifting. This is where the Golden Throne finally comes in.
Oh, the lighthouse.
Yes. The Emperor's dying mind projects the Astronomicon. It's a colossal, blinding, psychic beacon blazing across tens of thousands of light years. It is the single fixed star in the warp.
But keeping that lighthouse running requires unimaginable fuel. The text says the Emperor's mind alone isn't enough anymore.
Not even close. Roughly 1,000 psykers are sacrificed every single day.
Unbelievable.
Their psychic energy is siphoned into the machine. Their minds literally burn to ash just to keep the beacon lit for 24 more hours.
You just have to sit with that number for a second. 1,000 human beings fed into a furnace every single day. And the sheer logistical horror of a society where that paperwork is normalized. It's not some secret evil plot run by a villain. It's just municipal infrastructure.
And that cruelty extends to communication, too. There are no interstellar radios. The Imperium uses astropaths.
Which are, exactly?
They're psykers whose minds are heavily traumatized, often physically blinded, just by exposure to a fraction of the Emperor's power. So to send a message to another planet, an astropath basically hurls a telepathic scream into the warp.
It's like an empire held together by cosmic letters in bottles. You throw a message into a sea of demons, and you just have to hope someone on the other side catches it.
And the text notes that the message might arrive instantly, or it might arrive 300 years after you sent it. Or worse, the astropath receiving it might have their brain liquefied because a demon hitched a ride on the transmission.
This raises an important question, doesn't it? The text really forces us to look at the morality of an infrastructure built entirely on normalized human suffering. It makes you ask if an empire that requires daily mass sacrifice to exist actually deserves to survive at all.
It's a hard question to answer when you look at the reality of their universe.
Reading all this, my immediate reaction was, well, why can't they just invent better technology, like a new hyperdrive or AI navigation? If humanity used to be this advanced secular society, why are they stuck using mutant navigators and human sacrifice?
Because they tried innovation, and it almost drove humanity completely extinct.
Oh, right. The dark age of technology.
Yeah. Long before the Emperor's reign, humanity experienced a golden age. They possessed artificial intelligence and casual interstellar mastery. But that era collapsed when humanity's own AI rebelled against them.
So their fear of AI isn't just religious superstition. It's actual generational trauma from a machine apocalypse.
Exactly. The modern Imperium treats thinking machines as the ultimate heresy. They don't invent new technology. They worship the decaying technology they have left. A mechanic in 40K doesn't fix an engine by understanding how the gears work. They perform a ritual, apply sacred oils, and pray to the machine's spirit to make it function.
But the galaxy was broken long before humans even showed up to ruin things further, right?
Yeah.
The essay dives into ancient cataclysms that scarred the fabric of reality itself.
Oh, way before humans. Roughly 60 million years ago, there was a conflict called the War in Heaven. It was a devastating war between godlike ancient races that first churned the warp into a turbulent nightmare. And then much later, you had the Eldari.
The space elves?
Yes, the space elves. The Eldari were this ancient, hyper-advanced, deeply psychic race that ruled the galaxy basically unchallenged. But without any threats to unite them, they descended into extreme hedonism and decadence.
And because they were so psychically attuned, all that collective excess just pooled in the warp.
Precisely. Over millennia, that focused planetary scale depravity literally birthed a new chaos god, Slaanesh.
So they partied so hard they tore a permanent hole in reality.
Literally. The birth cry of that god ripped a massive warp storm into the physical universe, instantly destroying the Eldari Empire. And that collapse left a vacuum for humanity to rise into.
Which the Emperor tried to seize with his grand reconquest.
Mm.
Which brings us to the hinge of the entire mythology, the Horus Heresy.
The apocalypse that broke humanity's last hope.
I was so fascinated by the mechanics of this in the essay. Because the Emperor didn't just build an army. He used his own genetics to engineer 20 superhuman sons called the Primarchs, who would lead his Space Marine legions.
And the source text mentions a fascinating detail here. Two of those Primarchs and their entire legions were intentionally erased from all Imperial records.
Right. It's this unsolved mystery baked into the lore that the creators have purposely never explained.
It's the ultimate blank space for fans to obsess over. But of the remaining Primarchs, the greatest was the War Master Horus. In the 31st millennium, Horus fell to the whispers of chaos. He realized the Emperor was keeping secrets about the true nature of the warp, and he turned roughly half of his brother Primarchs against their father,
sparking a galactic civil war.
Yeah.
And that ended with Horus dead and the Emperor mortally wounded on the Golden Throne. So for 10,000 years since, the Imperium has just been bleeding out, fighting a defensive war on a million fronts against threats that are almost beyond comprehension.
The sheer volume of existential threats the essay outlines is just staggering. You have the traitor legions from the Horus Heresy who are still around, hiding in the warp, launching massive black crusades.
Then you have the orcs, and the text explanation of them is just wild. They aren't just mindless green barbarians.
Oh, the W-A-G-H energy.
Yeah, they have a psychic gestalt field. The orcs are a fungal species that literally reproduce by releasing spores when they fight. But their collective belief actually warps reality.
It's so bizarre.
Like if an orc builds a gun out of scrap metal and pipes that shouldn't mechanically fire, it fires simply because thousands of orcs believe it will. It's a hilarious, dark contrast to the Imperium's rigid, joyless dogma.
Mm-hmm.
The orcs are pretty much the only species in the galaxy actually having a good time.
Because they thrive on the endless war. But then you also have the Necrons, these soulless, undying robotic skeletons waking up from 60-million-year-old tomb worlds to reclaim a galaxy they view as theirs.
And the Tyranids. The essay describes them as an extragalactic hive mind swarm. You can't negotiate with them, you can't intimidate them. They just descend on a planet and strip every single ounce of biomass, oceans, and atmosphere, leaving just a barren rock. How do you even begin to fight something that just eats biospheres?
You basically just throw millions of soldiers into the meat grinder and hope the swarm chokes on them. Even the Tau Empire, which is a newer, seemingly idealistic, technologically advanced alien race that preaches the greater good, even they employ intense mind control and rigid caste systems to maintain their society.
No good guys anywhere. And looking at all this, the Empire's defenses finally cracked recently in the lore. A galaxy-spanning warp storm called the Great Rift tore the Imperium cleanly in half. So half the Empire can't even see the Astronomicon anymore. They're just cut off in the dark.
There is a tiny glimmer of hope mentioned in the text, though. For the first time in 10 millennia, one of the Emperor's loyal Primarch sons, Reboot Gilliman, was resurrected from stasis. He is now leading the defense.
But, you know, this being 40K, having a literal demigod return mostly just means the Imperium has slightly better logistics to manage its own slow demise. By the way, I actually went down a rabbit hole trying to figure out all the different names in the text.
It's easy to get lost.
So true. If you stumble across Age of Sigmar while looking into this, don't let it trip you up. It's a completely separate fantasy universe by the same company, not a reboot of 40K. 40K just keeps advancing the timeline. And apparently, the dwarf-like space miners called Squats, who were famously eaten by the Tyranids decades ago, were quietly brought back into the setting.
Lorjuffs, new models are sold, but the grimdark abides.
It really does. Which brings us back to you, listening to this. We've just mapped out this incredibly bleak fictional history. A galaxy ruled by a rotting corpse, powered by mass human sacrifice, navigating through a dimension of literal demons, fighting an endless war it cannot win. Why should you care about a universe this persistently dark?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, 40K is the ultimate thought experiment in grimdark fiction. It forces you to examine a universe where survival itself is framed as a tragedy. You don't read these stories and feel a sense of triumph when humanity wins a battle. You feel appalled at the cost of that endurance.
It holds a dark, funhouse mirror up to our own historical concepts of empire, religious dogma, and the military-industrial complex.
Exactly, asking us to look at the horrifying logical extremes of those ideologies.
It completely strips away the shiny, optimistic veneer of standard science fiction and leaves you staring at the raw, brutal mechanics of endurance. Which leaves me with a final thought, just a lingering question inspired by the absolute bleakness of this text.
Let's hear it.
If humanity's survival in the 41st millennium requires shedding every single ounce of its compassion, its rationality, and its empathy, If survival is powered by daily blood sacrifice, the mutilation of children into weapons, and blind fanatical dogma, at what point does the species actually stop being human? Are they saving humanity, or are they just preserving a monster that happens to wear its face?